Hi, this is Matt. I am recording outside today because it is gorgeous. And I thought I'd see how it sounds. It is definitely feeling like summer where I live, so there's going to be lawnmowers in the background, birds, all the rest. Maybe the occasional interruption by a kid. We will see how it goes. This one is called, this post is called When You Fail. Because a while ago, I wrote about how failure is not guaranteed, right? And at the time, I was in the midst of an intense period of online and clinical training for my work. And my thoughts were spiraling under the weight of it. Writing that post was a cathartic exercise for me, as it often is. And I found I needed to assure myself, in writing and in the investigation that that brings, that my failure is not guaranteed. And, sure enough, I'm happy to tell you, I didn't fail. Didn't fail my exam, my paper, or my clinical. I didn't fail my interview for my new position. I did not fail. Not at those particular moments, anyway. Because, of course, failure is not guaranteed, but neither is success. There will be times when we fail spectacularly, and this is about one of those times. Friday was one of those times. Now, a few weeks ago, when I started to write this, I was still in the last week of my clinical training, and on Friday, we had been unexpectedly let out early. And I felt amazing. I felt radiant. The last hurdle had been leapt. I could hardly remember an evening where each moment was not spoken for, where the weight of what was to come wasn't pressing down on me. But now, all of the deadlines were blissfully passed. It was the end of the week. The sun was warm and hazy, you know, and spring's just coming on. And wide open possibilities of a full weekend off lay in front of me. And then I came home. And the shine of what was going on began to wear off. So it's Friday, which means it's movie night at our house on Friday. But each kid that night just seemed agitated. They were continually in the other spaces, ignorant to the preordained sovereignty of each couch cushion, limbs spilling over their respective areas to hang off their annoyed sibling, bodies suddenly having no bones and just lying on the person next to them, feet digging into sides. It was the kind of restless general energy that always seems to result in wrestling, or, as we like to say in our house, wrassling. So it's my belief that wrassling at home only ever ends one of two ways. Either when we shut it down, when the parents shut it down, or in absolute tears. So it was tears, right? Tears, of course, or I wouldn't be writing about it on Friday. As the goofing around became violent, and resulted in my 8-year-old boy punching an arm that had held him for too long. So, all of a sudden it's serious, right? I called him away from the chaos of the couch to talk about how we need to be careful when we're angry. We can't just lash out when we're upset. But of course, by then, he was upset, and he wasn't hearing any of it. A wiser person might have considered the emotional state of his audience and the growing frustration in myself, but I did not. So, in moments, he was yelling, and unexpectedly, I was yelling too. 30 years between us, but here we are, an 8-year-old and a 38-year-old, in a shouting match with each other in the hallway. Now, cooler heads prevailed, of course, which means my wife tagged me out, and I retreated to the patio, but the night was ruined. And at that moment, all the previous successes just evaporated. The end of my course and the interview that went well, the sunny day, the wide open possibility of the weekend before me, gone, vanished. So, in case you somehow missed the incredible irony here, it's palpable. I was telling my son that we need to be careful in our anger seconds before I simultaneously made my point and lost all credibility. It was a big failure. And it betrayed who I was trying to be and revealed something deep inside. I'm always embarrassed for those who can't hold their emotions together in public. The couple that doesn't mind if the neighbors hear them yelling at each other on the patio. Or the hothead in the car behind you who lays on the horn and flips you the bird for driving the speed limit or slowing down for a yellow light. The restaurant patron who needs to berate the waitress for the food taking so long at lunch hour. These things have always looked, to me, like weakness. And that's what it was, right? It's not strength that causes me to raise my voice. It's weakness. The need to be powerful and heard. It's strange. In the moment, you puff up and you yell to feel bigger, stronger. But the moment after, you feel smaller and weaker than ever before. So a week after this outburst, I was traveling across the border to hear two of my favorite speakers. And it was like a spiritual pilgrimage of sorts. These speakers are wisdom teachers and tackling the big ideas and concepts, unearthing what it means to interact with the biggest mysteries of our lives, how to live a good life, how to craft meaning, and sometimes simply to wake to your life. Now, I had been listening to similar content for years now, but if ever I was beginning to believe the delusion that I had reached some plateau, some new level of enlightenment and wisdom, here was my outburst on Friday to cure me of that pretty quickly. Because all the big ideas in the world don't really have the least bit of value if you can't take them home with you, right? The only thing worse than the person who flips you the birds they pass you is seeing their bumper sticker promoting tolerance, right? Or not perfect, just forgiven. Or the only thing worse than the person laying into their waiter is that assailant being a spiritual guru or a church elder. I've always noted with disdain the pastor who leads a group of hundreds at church but whose own children hate him and rebel as loudly as possible. The therapist who can engage with anyone as long as they aren't family. They say that we often show the greatest disdain for others when they exhibit our own weaknesses. And I think when my conversation devolved into a yelling match with my kid, it revealed both to me what little control I have and the fraudulence of this enlightenment that I'm chasing. But enlightenment is a strange term, and one I've looked at a bit more since this blowout. In my life, enlightenment has always been a ridiculous word. Either far too light and ethereal to ever be of any real value, or else imbued with some magical status. Enlightenment, and you could throw in synonymous contemporaries such as like the evolution of consciousness, awakening, or woke, they could become a MacGuffin of sorts. A MacGuffin is a thing that people long for and strive after without ever realizing what it really is or why they pursue it. It occurred to me after all this failure that to enlighten something literally means to cast light upon it and reveal it. If we truly wish to be enlightened, we had best prepare for the possibility that we will not like what it illuminates in ourselves. Enlightenment gets lumped in with unexamined clichés such as knowing yourself, but, again, knowing yourself includes the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's all in there. Knowing myself includes knowing all the petty little ways I clamor for control. It includes revealing my temper and triggers. Now, we can ignore those dark and angry and embarrassing places inside of us, but that's not enlightenment or progress, that's just posturing and repressing. And posturing and repression may look good on the outside, but it certainly won't bring us any peace. And that's the goal, right? That's a real goal. Less yelling matches with our kids, less taking it out on the waiter, less road rage, enlightenment, waking up, progress, evolution. These all might sound a bit idealistic, but they're still good things, worthy of working towards. After our blowout, when we had both cooled down, my son sat next to me on the hammock as I held him tight, asked for his forgiveness, and once again, in a slightly new context, discussed the importance of controlling our behavior when we're angry. It doesn't negate everything that came before it, but it was a nice moment. In the days and weeks that have followed, I've been thankful that our closest relationships are cumulative. The strength of my relationship with my son is not absolved in one misstep, any more than it's secured by one success. And I think it's similar with our enlightenment, our progress, our waking up. It's less our arrival and more our continual, staggered march forward. It's a direction and movement over time. It, of course, includes our successes, but it graciously includes our failures as well. That's it, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope that you are well. Bye. One more thing.
Our music at the very beginning of this episode is Constructionism by A.A. Alto. And at the very end, that music is Headway by Kai Engel. They're both copyright-free music, and I am grateful to be able to use them. If you do want to find out a bit more about Something From Everything, obviously the website, somethingfromeverything.com. We also have a small Facebook group. If you just look on Facebook and search Something From Everything, you should be able to find it. And we just try to get some community conversation, interesting quotes, cool stuff like that that isn't quite as baked as a full-length episode. Anyway, I hope you're well, and talk to you later.